So Matthew 23, starting at verse 37. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it, how often would I have gathered your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. For I tell you, you will not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Jesus left the temple and was going away when his disciples came to point out to him the buildings of the temple. But he answered them, you see all these, do you not? Truly I say to you, there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down. As he sat on the Mount of Olives, his disciples came to him privately, saying, tell us when these things will be, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age. And Jesus answered them, see that no one leads you astray, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and they will lead many astray. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not alarmed, for this must take place, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are but the beginning of birth pains, but they will deliver you up to tribulation and put you to death, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another. And many false prophets will arise and lead many astray, and because lawlessness will be increased, the love of many will grow cold, but the one who endures to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. So when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, let the reader understand, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let the one who is on the housetop not go down to take what is in his house, and let the one who is in the field not turn back to take his cloak. And alas for women who are pregnant, for those who are nursing infants in those days. Pray that your flight will not be in winter or on a Sabbath, for then there will be great tribulation, such as not been seen from the beginning of the world until now. No, and never will be. And if those days had not been cut short, no human being would be saved. For the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. Then if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there he is, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders, so as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you beforehand. So if they say to you, look, he is in the wilderness, do not go out. If they say, look, he is in the inner rooms, do not believe it. For as the lightning comes from the east and shines as far as the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then will appear in heaven the sign of the Son of Man, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send out his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. From the fig tree learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts out its leaves, so you know the summer is near. So also, when you see all these things, you know that he is near, at the very gates. Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. For as were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day when Noah entered the ark. And they were unaware until the flood came and swept them all away. So will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two men will be in the field. One will be taken and one left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken and one left. Therefore stay awake, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom his master has set over his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is the servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. But if that wicked servant says to himself, my master is delayed, and begins to beat his fellow servants, and eats and drinks with drunkards, the master of the servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, at an hour he does not know, and will cut him to pieces and put him with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and a gnashing of teeth. Something that surprises many people is that Christians often find it hard to keep going. Why is that? So Christians, as Christians, find that hard. Obviously, there are places in the world it is hard to be a Christian. But even places like here, where it's relatively easy, people find it hard to keep going. So that's just Christians generally. But ministers in post, I trained 20 years ago, something like that, and quite a lot of people that I trained with have now given up ministry. Members in churches who have areas of service give up those areas. Now, why is that? Now, I guess there's quite a few reasons, but one reason is that it seems endless. It's hard to know what you're working to, what's your outcome, and also when are you working to? So there's a number of places we find in the Bible that encourage us just keep going. And that's why, I suppose, ties in with what Hugo was saying, why the Bible also keeps telling us encourage each other. You think, what's the matter with these weak Christians? Well, it's because we are weak and we do give up. So encourage each other. Keep going. And alongside that, it also says be ready. Be ready because there is an end that we're working to. It seems endless that there's no light at the end of the tunnel, but there is an end time and goal and objective. And this passage deals with that, to understand what's going on around you and keep on going because there is an end. There is a point and an objective. And be ready for it and what happens between now and then. And that helps us keep going if you know what the end is. That it's not totally open-ended. Some of you are still studying, and this may not be a comfort for you, that people who are much older than you, who went to university, still have flashbacks and nightmares that it's the day of your finals and you've forgotten to revise and you don't know what the exam is, so that just stays with you. But a good thing for you to know is that there is an end, that you do have a deadline, that you do have an exam, and it doesn't keep on going on, and you work towards it and then it's over. Now, there's quite a long reading early. Normally, what we've done with Matthew is have these bite-sized chunks, but actually this all hangs together and holds together, and it's hard to sort of chop it up. And it's a passage of which there's a great deal of disagreement, so if I upset anyone this morning, come tonight, I have more to upset you with on another controversial passage. I don't know how I've got them to tie together, but there's lots of different views. Well, they boil down to four distinct views. I'm not going to tell you what they are now, we dealt with those a while ago on Thursday evenings, but it's about the future and Jesus' return. And the central, straightforward message of it is Jesus is saying, keep going and be ready. Keep going and be ready. And the passage is about two things. They're related things, but they're a long way apart. And that is the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70 and Jesus' return. Now, why does AD 70 matter? Well, Jesus prophesied that it would happen, and the events change how God deals with Israel and the world. And it ties in with Jesus' return. So when we've looked at the Old Testament before, and you read something in the Old Testament and they're talking about the situation they're in, and you think, what's this got to do with a Christian in Chelmsford? The prophets, what they did is they looked at events that are near their time and the future at the same as the same thing. So when you're hill walking, if you go to the Alps, Alps are nice and pointy and you can see the peak you're going to. When you go to Wales, they misbehave. And so you think you're going to the summit, and just when you get there, you realise you're nowhere near, and you see the actual summit, or you thought was the actual summit. When you get there, you realise there's another one again. And so you see the hills as one thing. And the prophets often do that. So something near them, but actually they see it also as Jesus coming and his return. So I'll give you an example. Isaiah, when he is talking to his people, what happened then is the country Israel splits into two countries, and the top gets sort of dispersed and the bottom gets exiled and returns. And Isaiah prophesies all this. But when he prophesies the return of Judah back to Jerusalem and Judah, and he prophesies about the land, them coming back to the land and rebuilding the city and rebuilding the temple, he calls it the day of the Lord. And at the same time, he says, as they come back and they rebuild the temple, death will be no more and there'll be world peace. So the first bit happens, but it's saying there's more to come. But they are related. So it's not that Isaiah was wrong, but he sees it like this. And God restoring Israel is the beginning and the proof that God is going to restore the world. It's assurance of that. So Jesus does something similar in these bits, that he's talking about near events to him, and say, be prepared and keep going, and his return, be ready, it will be a surprise. So the near events, be prepared, and these future events, also be prepared, but it will be a surprise. Now, a bit of a recap, but also the opening verses that I read, the end of 23, the start of 24, is about the continued rejection of Christ leads to Christ rejecting. So Israel keep on rejecting Christ, and in the end, Christ rejects them. And this term, that idea has been repeated, hasn't it? That keep on rejecting Jesus, eventually he rejects you. And there's different ways, we've been told about that, but the failure of old Israel, especially the leaders. And so we saw an acted parable of the fig tree, the parable of the two sons, the tenants, the wedding. And we've seen in Jesus' interactions with the Pharisees and the Sadducees that they are finding excuses and rejecting him. And although he freely offers himself to them, he doesn't beg them either. He's not desperate in that sense. And his judgment on their rejection is he withdraws. And that's just what happened at the start of the reading. In 23, 37 to 39, so that last little bit of 23, he mourns for Jerusalem. Jesus is deeply moved by what's happening. And he longs to embrace them and protect them, but they don't want it. And so, verse 39, for I tell you, you will not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. So he's saying he will leave them. He wants to protect them. He wants to embrace him. They reject him. And so he says, you won't see me again until I come in judgment. And then the start of 24, there's something it's emphatic and it's visual. Verses 1 and 2, Jesus left the temple and was going away. Then when his disciples came to point out to him the buildings of the temple, but he answered them, you see all these things, do you not? Truly I say to you, there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down. So verse 1, do you notice it says he left the temple. So we've actually been in the temple since chapter 21. Chapter 21, he arrives, we're still there, and now he leaves. And it says, so he left the temple and was going away. Some versions say he left and went. It's emphatic. You don't need both of those. But just to make sure you got it, there's a doubling to make sure we saw it. He really has gone. He left and he went. And verse 2, more visual, as the disciples go, wow, look at this amazing building. He talks about it's going to be wrecked. this beautiful building that you have so much pride in is going to be thrown down and destroyed. Everything is about to change. So throughout the Old Testament, and even throughout the ministry of John the Baptist and Jesus, the emphasis is towards Israel, and through Israel, God will make himself known to the whole world. But Jesus has been warning, actually the prophets warned this sort of thing as well, Jesus has been warning, if you continue to reject me, these privileges will be withdrawn from you and given to others. Those who are not my people will now be my people. It will go to the Gentiles. The centre of gravity will shift. And here Jesus turns away, and the special status that they enjoyed has now gone. And so the disciples ask a question. Tell us when these things will be, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age. So the response to what Jesus just said is they ask a question, well, when? But actually their question is two. Question one, when will this be? When will the temple be destroyed? And question two, what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? In their minds, it's the same question. And they are related. They're closely related theologically, but they're separated by a long period of time. So Jesus answers both questions at times together, at times he distinguishes. And it's sort of a more theological answer he gives, but it's very practical. And basically what he says is it talks about persevere. This is the sort of practical import. Persevere, be warned, and be ready. So firstly, persevere, verses 4 to 14. Now Jesus here is talking about the time up to AD 70 and the time up to the end. It's relevant to both. The features we've seen just after Jesus' ministry, we see today. So they are false Christs, verse 5, wars, verses 6 and 7, natural disasters in verse 7, persecution, verse 9, apostasy, verses 10 to 12, and the gospel going to the Gentiles. So first, Christ, the problem there is deception. People make huge truth claims about their uniqueness. Jesus says, don't be led astray by that. Stick to what you have. Wars in verses 6 and 7, and rumours of wars. So often people look at these things and go, oh, Jesus must be coming. No, don't jump the gun. Natural disasters in verse 7. In Romans, Paul talks about fallen creation is groaning for its redemption. And Jesus says that is the start of birth pains. So notice it's not the end. It is the beginning of the start of birth pains. It's a visual way of talking about something that is a long, drawn-out process. Most women who have given birth describe it as a fairly long, drawn-out process. It is painful, but it is productive. Then persecution in verse 9. At first, the early Christians were persecuted by their fellow Jews, and Jesus warned them of that back in chapter 10. But now he warns this is going to happen in every nation where the gospel goes. So although the opportunity is moving away from Israel to the world, still there'll be rejection wherever the church goes, leading to apostasy, verses 10 to 12. That is, Christians, God's people, will abandon the faith. At the very least, they will cool their love and their devotion for him. That's a very solemn warning, isn't it? That you can just become very unkeen. But Jesus makes an encouragement in verse 13, but the one who endures to the end will be saved. And that the gospel will go to the Gentiles in verse 14. So the message is clear. Keep going, endure, persevere. Often this is called the signs of the times. They're not there to speculate, but to prepare. So people often look at the news and they see something happening in Israel or some fleet movement of ships in the Pacific or something, and they go, oh, this is the bit in Revelation or Jesus talking about. No, it's not to speculate or predict, but to prepare. And also these signs show us that as we see these things in the news or we experience them ourselves, they're not a sign that things are going wrong. They're a sign that things are going to plan and that the end is in sight. And then Jesus moves on to be warned, verses 15 to 35. This section is all about the fall of Jerusalem. Now, in AD 66, the Jews rebelled against Rome. And in AD 70, around the time of the Passover, so when in Acts, when you read about all these people coming to Jerusalem from all over the known world, so they would be there from Egypt and Persia and across Greece and Rome and all over Europe, they would have come to Jerusalem for the Passover. And at that point, Rome took its retribution. So Jerusalem would have been packed, and as they were attacking the villages and the area of Judea, people would be retreating into Jerusalem. So when Rome actually got to Jerusalem and smashed it, about 1 million people died, they think. It was a terrible time. And those who didn't die were mistreated in all sorts of ways, and they were dispersed across the known world. And so Jesus speaks of that event. And in fact, more liberal Bible scholars assume that Matthew, Mark, and Luke must be written a long time after AD 70 because of the accuracy Jesus speaks of it. Although there's more and more evidence that all of these were written far earlier than AD 70. And because of the cosmic catastrophic language that Jesus uses, a lot of people take this to mean that Jesus is talking about his return. But he's not. The things are linked. They're linked. And actually, the fall of Jerusalem is a cosmic catastrophic event that affects everything. Historians would just, this has happened to other cities, but it is actually affects the whole world. It's hugely theologically significant. So there's a history pattern in verse 15. He mentions the abomination of desolation spoken of in Daniel. We looked at Daniel years ago. The message of Daniel is this: be faithful, even if it costs you. So Daniel and his friends do that, and they're saved. But Daniel warns at the end of the book that some will be faithful, and it will cost them even their life, but they'll be raised on the final day. And in his book, he talks about this, he prophesies this abomination of desolation, and points towards a great persecution. Now, from Jesus' standpoint, this is something that happened in the past. It's a historic event. So Daniel talks about events that for the next few generations after him. And there was a Greek leader called Antiochus Epiphanes, means God manifest, and he conquered Israel. He sacked the temple. He put up the idols of his gods. He sacrificed pigs on the altar. And he tortured Jews. One of the things he did is he would hold pork in front of them, and they had to bite it. If he didn't, he would torture them or their families. And so many other terrible things I won't repeat now. So it was a horrible moment in their history. And Jesus is saying, well, Daniel said to them, this is going to happen. Be faithful, and you will be raised on the last day. Jesus is saying something like that is coming again. Something very similar is happening again. And AD 70 was very similar. Notice it's specific to Judea in verse 16. So some people take these references about Jesus' return in the future, but verse 16, specific to Judea. In fact, an interesting thing about this is that this is where Christians and Jews increasingly drifted apart, because Christians saw the signs and fled. So in the Old Testament, often when Israel was being invaded, the prophets would say, stand firm, I'll deliver you at the last moment. But here Jesus says, no, don't do that. Flee when you see this coming. And so when people often think, well, we need to take all this literally, well, we need to take the Judea bit literally. This is talking about Judea. And that it's terrible in verses 17 to 28. We won't go through everything, but it's going to be even worse than Antiochus Epiphanes and the other terrible events that happened in Israel's past. And when it happens, flee. Don't stand firm, flee. And so verses 23 to 27, it is so bad that people assume it's the end. But it's not the end, Jesus says. It is not his return. And this is a curious phrase, in fact, in verse 28. Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. Now, I used to teach at the European Bible School, and I was teaching about Jesus' return, and I was looking at this passage, and interestingly, one time I read it, I was corrected. I had six native Greek speakers, and they were rating out of 10 my Greek pronunciations, and when I read this bit, I was corrected by a Spaniard who read it out in the original Spanish. It's not written in Spanish, but in Spanish, the translation said eagle. And interestingly, everyone else's native language, they've translated it eagle, But in all the English translations I've come across, it's translated vulture. Now, the Greek word means vulture or eagle. In modern Greek, it means eagle. Now, think for a moment what Jesus is talking about. The Romans, you can see them in the museums, in the history books, as they stand with their standards. And on the top of them is an eagle. So loads of these Romans with their standards coming in and all the corpses around Jerusalem. It's what Jesus is talking about. He talks about political upheaval in the stars, verse 29. So in the prophets, moon, sun, stars often refers to kingdoms and political powers. I've put some references down there. In Genesis specifically, it means the patriarchs. So he's saying that all the political systems are going to be shaken at this time. And the events of AD 70 change how God deals with the world. Powers rise and powers fall, just as Daniel says. And then he says the Son of Man will come on the clouds, verses 30 to 31. But come where? Again, this is about Daniel. So often this is assumed that it's about the second coming. But when the phrase is used, when any phrase is used in the Bible, it's worth seeing is it used somewhere else. And we have seen it before. In Daniel, the Son of Man comes on the clouds. But where does he come to? He comes to the Ancient of Days, not to the earth. He comes to the Ancient of Days on clouds, where the Ancient of Days, it's God, gives him all authority to judge the nations, and he is then worshipped. So this links back to the stars in verse 29. So, in fact, in this chapter, there's two words about Jesus coming, appearing and coming. So the first part of the chapter is mostly appearing, apart from when it says that he's coming will be seen everywhere, but he keeps on appearing. The word's also used of a sort of inspection before a royal visit. And then afterwards, the word is coming. So the Son of Man appears on the clouds, and Jesus now is reigning in judgment over the world. So these events in the past, AD 70, is the prophets in the Old Testament spoke of, is the judgment that starts there and eventually goes out throughout the world. So the prophets often talk about God's judgment starts with his own household. It starts in the temple and moves out to Jerusalem, Judea, and then to the world. It's just what happens. Jesus starts there. The situation with Israel has now changed. The judgment has started, and we're now in the end days. He also says in verses 32 to 35, this generation. So it's important when people are trying to date these events, Jesus says this will happen within a generation. Again, some people want to take these Old Testament phrases and apply it to events now and take certain things more literally. But actually, this generation is a literal thing, isn't it? Think about Jesus' return. He's saying, no, this is not about when I return. These events I'm talking about are within the generation of you listening to me, not us listening to him. So within the lifespan of the youngest hero, so it's talking about 30 or 40 years within the span that Jesus is talking of. Now this ties in with everything we've looked at this term in chapters 21 to 23. Jesus offers himself to Israel. Mostly they reject him, and he then withdraws. And then he removes their special place of privilege that Israel's enjoyed. And it's the start of judgment and a sign of what is to come to the rest of the world. Again, the warning we keep hearing this term is if we keep refusing Jesus' offer, eventually the offer is withdrawn and it's given to another. Now, in the past, British Christian writers have warned about this. They said there's a special privilege that we've enjoyed but we can't presume on, and it could be withdrawn from us and given to heathen lands if we presume. And they mentioned places that would have been at their time unimaginable to have churches. And of course today the strongest churches are in just the places that they mentioned. Places like South Korea and China. Whilst Christian nations have churches that stagnate. So there's a warning here again that we keep on hearing not to sit on privilege, not to ignore and avoid opportunities to reach out. And opportunities, if we do that, those opportunities will be taken to others. As D.L. Moody said, God prefers the way I do it to the way you don't. Or to grow, to come to Christ and say, but no further, I don't want to be keen about it. And specifically to those on the fence, the offer does not stand forever. Don't put it off. The other day, someone stopped me in the street and to ask about my electricity bills and so on, and that they could offer me a better deal. And I said, that's great. I'll look at the website when I get home. No, you have to choose now. Now, as soon as someone says that, I'm a bit suspicious. But that is the gospel offer. It doesn't just stay there for you to dither and think about forever. It's on offer now, but don't put it off. And the final thing he says is to be ready in verses 36 to 51. So Jesus has dealt with Israel's near future. Now he turns to the world's far future. Just as some thought the last bit is about his return, some think this bit, he's still talking about AD 70. But Jesus, I think, has changed gear here, because he's now not talking about appearing but coming. And up to this point, he's been saying, talking about something that's soon, this generation. Now he talks about nobody knows. And he tells a couple of punchy parables to make the point. In the next few weeks, he'll make a few more that we'll look at in a bit more detail. So the shift has happened, that so far this term is don't dither, don't keep Jesus' arm's length. Now it is be ready. So AD 70 and Jesus' return are linked. Jesus' life, the cross, the resurrection, the giving of the Spirit, the fall of Jerusalem, all means we're now in the end times. We are in the last days. Israel has been judged. Jesus is on the throne. And the next stage is his return. And the point he's making in different ways is be ready, because it's unexpected. Verse 36, nobody knows. And verse 36 is a shocking and mysterious verse, because it says, not even Jesus knows. Does he mean while on earth, now? How can that be? Well, it's mysterious. We don't know. But it makes the point that you don't know, definitely. And the people who knock on your door, they don't know. So AD 70 narrows down one generation from Jesus speaking. His return, it's unknown. Now, time to time, people speculate and narrow down the dates. JWs keep on coming up with dates, with some ingenious maths. We take some numbers from Daniel here and some other numbers there and some events you saw in the news, and Jesus is coming back in the next 10 years. No, we're not to do that. Nobody knows. But we know what it's like. And three things he says that it's like, more or less saying, making the same point. Like the days of Noah, like a thief, like a ready servant. Like the days of Noah in 37 to 42, then God judged the world, saving just one man and his family. Noah knew what was coming and prepared for it. For years he was building an ark and mocked for it, understandably, building a massive ship miles inland when it doesn't rain very much. And then the flood came. And people were getting on with life in verse 37. They were eating and drinking and getting married. In verse 38, they were unaware as the flood came. And so in 40 to 42, there's a picture of people doing ordinary things when the divine judgment comes. And more on those in the next weeks, of how Jesus will return means judgment and division. It's what we have to think of. And then it's like a thief in verses 33 to 34. This is used a few times by Jesus and by Paul. If you've ever been burgled or robbed, it's a horrible thing to happen to you. It comes out of the blue, which is why most of us buy locks and lock our doors. Some have alarms, some have dogs, to deter, because you don't know when these things will happen. That's how it works. If a thief left a calling card, if you've got an Amazon account, they give you an email to tell you the time that it's going to arrive. Now, if thieves did that, they'd be very unsuccessful. And just like with Amazon, if you're not in, say, leave it with a neighbour to say, I will be in, go and burgle a neighbour, it won't work, will it? There'd be a poor thief. Or you'd move your stuff out. That's why we take reasonable precautions, because we don't know when a thief comes. Same with Jesus. We do not know. So we always have to be ready. Like a ready servant in verses 45 to 51. He tells a short story or parable. A man goes away, leaves a servant in charge with certain duties, and when he returns doing them, there'll be a blessing. But verse 48, what if not? What if he abuses his power and mistreats the staff and resources? The master returns unexpectedly and he's caught in the act. Well, what then? Well, verse 51. He says, and will take him out and cut him to pieces and put him with the hypocrites in the place. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So it's clear what Jesus is talking about and what is at stake. And it's worth thinking about. Be ready. I saw a bumper sticker that says, a little picture of a man dropped down dead, and it said, many a man who seeks God in the 11th hour dies at 10:30. Bart Simpson said his plan for life was to live a reckless life and have a deathbed conversion. You can't plan for that. We kind of laugh, but people do that. I'll get serious about it when I'm old. And of course, I won't ask for a show of hands of who thinks they're old. No one thinks they're old yet, do they? Well, very few people. We simply don't have that luxury. You don't know when it's your time. And you know even less as to when it's Jesus's. I've buried people younger than anyone in the room, sadly. Babies, people in their 20s, 30s, 40s. And some of those that I've buried had nothing wrong with them until they dropped over. If they went to the doctor that day, the doctor would have given them a clean bill of health. You don't know when that's going to happen to you. And add to that, Jesus could return before that anyway. And we have less idea about that. One way or another, you will meet Jesus. You are going to meet him. Are you ready for him? Will you meet him covered in the pathetic fig leaf of your own righteousness? Or saved by Christ and clothed with him? Are you, like we try to demonstrate with the box, are you carrying those sins on you and think that you can get in that way? Or have they been removed so you're prepared to meet him? Are you meeting him as a friend or as an enemy? And how can I be so sure to say all this? Well, because Jesus has risen from the dead. That points to the resurrection of the future. Because AD 70 panned out as he said, and the two events are linked. AD 70 is the start. The return, his return is the end of this age and the start of the new creation. You will not live here forever. What more information do you need? Not what more information do you like or are curious about, there's lots of that, but what do you need to make your decision for Christ? Christians, how does Jesus' return impact you? The Bible encourages us repeatedly that we're to live in the world, we are to get jobs and contribute to society and get married and have children and all those sorts of things. And all of life, whatever job you do, all of it is significant and under Jesus' lordship. But we should be shaped by the future, how we spend our time and money, our thinking about outreach and mission and how we invest ourselves. And often people feel they've wasted their life, maybe if you've got friends who are very successful. But when Jesus returns, everyone will dramatically reevaluate everything. When we start to think about what matters in eternity and to start to live and think now in an eternal perspective. Jesus is coming. You are going to meet him. That changes everything. Jesus is coming. Are you ready to meet him?